Okay, now let's see what we have to talk about today. That is this. Actually, this is the last subject that we have in this chapter, the course. Still working on epigenetic inheritance and whatever. And then on Monday we will just discuss the research paper too. Okay, so just making some technical point on the stories. So this is the subject of today is actually monoallelic expression. And we have two sub-chapters inside, that is X chromosome inactivation and genomic imprinting, that are two very interesting biological phenomena that you will see. Actually, I wrote to you yesterday. I don't know if you have seen the mail. Because I spend a lot of time to find a review to give you as a textbook for this particular subject. And finally I found a very good one, that is this one, that has been published just in December, last December, so it's very recent. And they discuss the story from the monoallelic point of view, that is very modern, so it's very actual, it's very good. The only problem with this review is that it has been written by non-English people, but anyway, there are some syntactical funny things, but anyway, it's really okay. So in the lecture today, you won't find actually parts taken from this review because it's too recent. So I will discuss exactly the same subject, but using different slides taken from older reviews, but don't worry. I mean, if the content is more or less the same. So what they say is that they present all the cases in which there is monoallelic expression. I skip this table because it's complicated. I just make a resume of it. It's better. So we have many cases in which the expression of genes comes in the cells only from either the paternal or the maternal allele. Okay? This is it was thought to be a real unusual situation until a few years ago. Okay? So until a few years ago, let's say before having the RNA-seq technology, we were actually quite convinced that most of our genes had biallelic, okay, expression. So both alleles were expressed more or less the same, okay. But actually, with the introduction of RNA-seq and other kind of careful studies that can distinguish in between the two alleles, okay, this idea was a little revised, because as you can see, we have many cases in which we have monoallelic expression. And the first one we knew since very long time is the X chromosome inactivation in females. That is it concerns something like 2,000 genes, as a matter of fact. Okay, so one of the two X is inactivated. And this is what older authors call it gene dosage compensation, because of course men have only one X chromosome, okay, and females they have two, and so making two copies instead of one should probably reorganize all the biology of the cells. It's probably evolutionary too difficult. So what happened almost all the animals is that just one of the two X chromosomes completely is not true, completely, because we have some genes that escape this inactivation. But anyway, most of the genes from one X chromosome are completely off of the story. So then we have this genomic imprinting. Genomic imprinting was discovered many, many years ago, but actually only today we know that it will conserve something like 120 protein coding genes plus several non-coding RNAs, in which again we observe only expression from one of the two alleles. Okay? Then we have known stories like antigen receptor. You know that probably T cell, as well as B cells, they express only one of the two alleles for immunoglobulin or T cell receptors, okay, after recombinational events, okay? So this is a known story. Then we have a very interesting story about olfactory receptor genes, especially for neurobiologists in the audience, that concerns something like 1,400 genes. Of them, only one is expressed in each cell, so it's a kind of monoallelic, kind of different story, but anyway, monoallelic expression. And then we know from recent RNA-seq data that there are other random genes, individual genes all around, that escape all this kind of classification, but they are actually expressed in a monoallelic way, and they concern something like 1,000 genes. So if you sum up all these stories, it makes quite a large proportion of our genes that actually have monoallelic expression. And what the philosophy of this review that you have as a textbook is that they have a common mechanism. Okay, so they treat all these kinds of stories on the optical point of view. Okay, that the mechanisms are more or less the same. Okay, so that's technical. How can we know that the gene is expressed monoallelically? So that's a good point. But this is linked to the fact that, as you know, we individuals are really different from the genomic point of view. There are many, many variants. I don't know if yesterday, looking at the browser, you appreciate all the variants that are in a... Did you? No. You don't remember. You don't either. In the EMBO, there are all these shadowed nucleotides. All of them are variants, so you can imagine. So when you have two strains of mice, okay, that are from different strains, you can sequence the genome of them, and you have real different reference genome. So when you have RNA-seq experiment, you can really distinguish. Okay, an older fashion to see was a single gene, was a allele-specific PCR, in which you put the primers, okay, and you choose to have the 3' prime of the primer on a SNP. Since the extension of the primer is strictly linked to the pairing of the 3' prime end, if you have unpairing there, you don't have amplification, you can distinguish. Okay, so there are methods to distinguish, quite easy. So, okay. Now, let's look at the first story. So the first story is the X chromosome inactivation. It's quite an amazing story. And I took all the slides from this review. Actually, you don't have this review as a textbook, but you can find it in bibliography if you want. This is Jenny Lee, is one of the most important scientists studying this kind of regulation. Okay, so this is called dosage compensation, and I told you about already. So we have a little different situation in mammals if you compare non-placental or placental mammals. So in marsupials, X chromosome inactivation is imprinted. And imprinted means that there is an instruction in the gametes, so in the sperm oocyte, telling which one should be inactivated. Okay? So this is an epigenetic instruction that comes from the gametes. Okay? And so that the chromosome, X chromosome that is inactive is always the paternally inherited one, okay? In marsupial, okay? In all the other mammals, this is a quite different story in the sense that you have imprinted inactivation of the paternal gene at the very beginning. So at the very early stage of development, you have paternal X inactivated. But then you have, again, activation of the two and random selection in somatic cells. Okay? And this is the reason why, for example, you have X-linked characters or features that are patched in the animal, in the organism. Do you know one example of those? One example in which you see females that are patched and males that are monocolor? Cats. Yeah, that's typical. Okay, so this is a X-linked character. So you have this kind of random choice during development of one or the other. Okay, so good. So let's see the cycle. Okay, just of course I am not presenting you the story with this slide that is almost invisible to you. I cut parts of it to illustrate. Okay, so we have. Hi. We have different parts. So let's look at what happens before the zygote formation. Okay. So the nomenclature XP, X paternal, X maternal comes from the oocyte or whatever. And so you have the X chromosome coming from the father, okay, is already post-meiotic silenced. So it means that during production of the spermatocytes, during meiosis, okay, remember that we have meiosis to produce spermatocytes. Okay, during meiosis, you have silencing, okay, of this chromosome X. The red one is, sorry, I indicated the Y, this is Y. This red one is the chromosome mix. Okay, so when you see red, means inactivated. Okay, so inactivated means completely hypermethylated with all Eastern marks. Then, if you remember, the methylation is probably the only epigenetic marks that remain. Why? In the real spermatocyte. Because? Do we have histones there? We don't have histone anymore. Actually, recent studies show that some histone may remain, but protamines. Okay? So the real marks that stays there after inactivation are CpG methylation. So you have this situation in the zygote in which you have XM, that is the maternal chromosome that is only partially inactivated, and the XP that is completely inactivated. Okay, then go through the zygote. Okay, so you remember that when you have you go from the one cell to the two cell stage, at this point you start to have zygotic gene activation. So you start to have transcription of the genes there. Okay. And in this situation, you have that the repetitive elements, so you remember all these lines, signs, and whatever, that are repetitive, they are in the paternal X chromosome, are inactive, but they are not inactive in the maternal X chromosome. Okay? So this is a kind of what they take from the post-mitotic silencing here. Okay? X-linked coding genes on the XP paternal are initially active, and they are progressively inactivated during pre-implantation development. So what happens is this is partially inactivated, and then it gets completely inactivated after a while. Okay? So you have the following division, and this is completely inactivated. So then you go to the successive phase. You have here the arrow. Here, this is the start point. So you arrive to the blastocyst. And of course, here you have already differentiation in between what is the epiblast, so the future embryo, and the trophoextroblast. That is, of course, the what will give rise to extraembryonic tissues. Okay. So here you have a strange phenomenon, because in the epiblast you have complete XP reactivation. You see that it's becoming white. So again, all this kind of repressive methylation, whatever that were in the XP, erased. Okay? Gone. And on the contrary, In the trophoectoblast, so the cells here, you keep this kind of imprinting of the XP. Okay? So in the placenta, in the formed placenta, so just also at birth, I mean, you have this situation. So it's something in between with the marsupials, okay? So you have imprinted the XP, but this is kept only in the non-embryonal tissues. In the embryo proper, so this epiblast that is developing, okay, there is, at this point, there is random inactivation, okay? So you have either one or the other one that is inactivated in different cells. So this is a random process, it proceeds like this, okay? And the only other thing that actually happens is that in germinal cells, you remember this kind of germinal cells, you have again complete reactivation. The logic is simple. In germinal cells, you have zero imprints. Okay, so again, you have in these cells, you have again a white situation of genomic imprints. Okay. Okay, so this is the cycle, and essentially we have this kind of story. So we can try to make the point. So we have imprinted inactivation of XP, and this will follow the normal use of imprinting that we will see in a moment, that are widespread CpG methylation and other phenomena. Okay, and the second thing is that we have random epigenetic inactivation 1x, and this depends on a completely different phenomenon that we will examine now. So we have this random choice of one or the other. This has been, you know, a problem that has really taken a lot of time to try to understand, because it's very difficult. I spent some minutes to make you realize that this is very difficult, because you have two chromosomes, right? And then something happened in which they are both active, as you can see, white, okay? So no story. Then one of the two decides to become inactive. And the other one decides to become active. What is the molecular mechanism? This is a kind of very difficult story to understand. You may think that there is only one transcription factor, for example, only one copy in the cell, one copy of the one transcription factor that binds to one of each stochastically and then drives the activation. This is very difficult. There are virtually no mechanisms to account for that. Okay. Another way to think is that you may have a kind of progressive inactivation that starts stochastically and then it's a kind of cascade. So if something happens to one, then it falls down, cascade, and since there is no expression, you have a kind of feedback that keeps the other one alive. This can be the idea, again. It is strange because people started to ask for this problem, for example, looking at the strange phenotype, like, you know, that there are individuals who have two X's and one Y or something like this. And always you have only one inactivated. That is really strange as a story. So there is a mechanism that counts in some way the inactivated chromosome, okay? And this has not been resolved, that's completely the story. What we know is that this inactivation depends on a single center, a single locus, on the X chromosome, right? That is called XIC, X inactivation center. And if you, this is easy to do, I mean, people work it with mouse, of course, and they inactivate, so they knocked out this locus, and so no inactivation occurs. So this is clearly due to this kind of locus. Let's see what the locus is. This locus is a strange story. If you go to this site, Now that you have learned how to go to the genome browsers, you can go to the genome browser and see what happens. And this is a large piece of chromosome in which there are virtually only non-coding genes. There are many, many, many genes that are non-coding. You just see some of them, but imagine this situation continues. You have many, many transcribed regions, but all these guys there are actually non-coding. So they can be transcribed, they give rise to RNA, no ORF, no protein, okay? Then you have the most interesting region at all is this this one, okay? From this region here, there are two long non-coding, because this takes several kilobases, so really big RNA, that are transcribed in a mutually exclusive way. Okay? So you have transcription of from this direction, and you have an RNA that is called exist. Okay? But whenever you have transcription from this side, you don't have antisense transcription. Or if you have antisense transcription starting from here and going to the other side there, and this is called reverse, like XISTTSIX. Okay, this RNA, this inhibits transcription of the exist. So either one or the other one. Okay, if you look at the inactive chromosome, so the one that is completely inactive, heterochromatized, there is transcription of this exist. Okay? If you look at the active chromosome, there is transcription only of this TSIX RNA. So it's yin yang story on this locus. Okay. Now, what happens with transcription? Okay, look at this. This is the larger story. You see that there are several genes that are transcribed either in one sense or the other one. And there is a very complicated story about this, the fact that each of them can regulate transcription of either exist or TSIX. Let's skip. It's very complicated. Nobody actually resolved all the story. So concentrate only on the center. That is probably the one. Okay? So, this is the exist gene, okay, exist gene, and this has, please note this rep A. This is a repetitive sequence here that is very important. Just note it for the moment, okay? And note also that this rep A can be transcribed itself alone. All the stories that you see here are the phenotypes that you, if you delete, okay? So if you delete this XI nucleation center, this part here, you won't have any inactivation anymore. If you delete all this story here, you won't have silencing and spreading on the gene. And this is the counting and pairing that we'll see in a moment. So this is, for example, if you delete this part here, you don't have any more counting. So if you have many copies of X, it will be randomly inactivated. Okay, so it's probably a story linked to this site, or, I mean, nobody knows exactly how it works. Anyway, so what happens in the early phases is this one, okay? The two chromosomes, okay, this is an interphase chromosome, right? Okay, early phase, so you have, after embryonic stem cells start to differentiate, that means that we are in stage 8 cells or something like this, okay, going through to the blastocyst, okay? You have a phenomenon in which you see that the two chromosomes, paternal and maternal, they get together. There is a transient phase, not very long, in which the two chromosomes are close to each other, maybe they touch. Nobody knows exactly. And after this kiss in between the chromosomes, you have starting an expression of one of the two chromosomes starts to express exist RNA. Okay? So if you made the fish analysis of the exist RNA, you start to see a color in a point, and then in a successive time, next time, you have almost complete covering of the chromosome by this transcript. Okay? This is a very strange phenomenon. Okay? So you have something like this chromosome territory, and then probably the exist locus probably loops out, as you know. It goes close to a transcriptional factory and start to see this exist RNA. Okay? And then the gene is apparently is inactivated, so you cannot see the loop anymore. Okay? But the RNA diffuses, but it doesn't diffuse away from the chromosome. It just stays on the chromosome, and you see all the chromosome completely colored. You see here, this is it's different chromosomes in the plate, and you see just the exist RNA, as you see, is really localized on only one of the chromosomes. Again, just to see, this is exist, okay? And this is a DAPI staining, so you see the nucleus. This is H3K27M3, and you see here clearly the chromosome that is getting heterochromatic here. You see the exist RNA is coincident, same story, okay? This is negative control, no staining, and this is K27M3 and exist together, and you see that they're completely colocalized. So what happens is this, more or less, that you have a starting point of the chromosome with active genes and so, and then you start to have exist RNA, and then this exist RNA actually diffuses in the chromosome, and then you have compaction. There are few genes that remain external to this, okay, and they will be expressed. And they call escape genes. There are a few of them, really not many. Okay, and so what is this is just enlargement to see better this kind of colocalization. Good, enlargement, so always the same story. Okay, this is a protein, SAT-B1 is a protein that is probably linked to internalization of the genes. So inactive genes, after a while, they stay all in the center of the chromosome. Okay, let's see the mechanism. I mean, the mechanism that we know, that is a little still to be worked out completely. So what we see at the active locus, at the active chromosome, we have transcription of this antisense transcript, right? TSIX. In this situation, you do not have transcription of the exist on the sense, right? The only part that is transcribed from the sense strain is this repetitive element A. That makes a very short RNA, okay, very short. You see that molecules there means a very short piece of RNA. It doesn't take all the exist coding. And this, very interestingly, this small RNA, repetitive RNA, contains a binding site for something that we know, the PCR2. The PRC2, I always make a mistake over there. PRC2 complex, you remember what it is? The K27M3 methylase, okay? Binding of this RNA with PRC2 is very specific, okay? So all the molecule of PRC2 will be bound by the red RNA, but the problem is that they diffuse away. They are not bound to the locus, so they diffuse away, okay? And nothing happens, okay? So the chromosome remains active, and here is what we call it before the nucleation center, if you remember in the map. Sorry, nucleation center is here, and this nucleation center remains empty. Sorry, remains empty and inactive. Okay, so everything goes like this. During the entire life of the chromosome, active chromosome, you keep to have this kind of transcription to TSIX. Okay, it keeps to be transcribed like this. So the center transcribed, everything else repressed. Now look at what happens to the other, so to the inactive. Okay, look at what happens. So in the inactive, okay, you start to have transcription of TSIX, but after a while, an adjacent gene here starts to be transcribed and inhibits transcription of TSIX. You see there? Okay. Why this gets to be transcribed here, nobody knows. But it happens. Okay, so you have transcription of this, and this inhibits fundamentally transcription of TSX and starts transcription of exist. So you have transcription of exist. Okay, this contains also the repeat, of course, because the rep A part is inside, and this binding site rep A will bind, of course, PRC2 as before. The only difference is that after the site binding the PRC2, there is another binding site in this RNA that is a binding site for a factor that is called YY1. You see here, YY1. This is a transcription factor, so it binds to DNA, and in the nucleation center, you have a perfect element binding YY1. Okay, so at this point you have transcription of exist. Exist will be bound to the nucleation center through interaction with this YY1 transcription factor. Conclusion: the conclusion is that the PRC2 complex stays there, doesn't go away as it was before. Before it was going away, diffusing. And in this case, it stays there, okay, and will inhibit, start to make, of course, heterochromatization of the region. Okay? Good. At this point, all the molecules that have PRC2 bound and, of course, the exist RNA diffuse it along the chromosome, okay, they diffuse away. Along the chromosome on the left and on the right, and every time there is a YY1 binding site, they will bind to it. Okay. Of course, don't ask me why, because I don't know. I mean, the exact reason why these kinds of molecules do not diffuse away, as was in the case of RepA, PS2, nobody knows, actually. Maybe that is just a consequence of binding to close, very close, very close. So this is but after a while, you have all the chromosome is covered by this exist RNA. And so you have many, many, many molecules of PRC2 that carry on the heterochromatization. Except, of course, that in this particular region, because if you heterochromatinize also this kind of genes, you won't have any more transcription of the exist, right? So locally, this nucleation center will be removed. So you can continue transcription by RNAP. And this is, again, something that is not really understood completely. Okay, so that's so to make the story short, fundamentally you have a let's say, a yin-yang situation in which you have either transcription of this TSIX or transcription of the exist, okay? And this is probably something stochastic in some sense. So if you have one will prevail, and or the other one will prevail in some situation. But the problem is that nobody has worked out how the X chromosomes are counted. So why one is getting inactivated and the other one is not. Is that clear? Yeah, no, it's not clear. Yeah. YY1 was originally described as a normal transcription factor years ago, and especially in the nervous system, as a matter of fact, it was directing some phenomena over there. But then people realized that actually it has a double domain. One is a DNA binding domain, the other one is a RNA binding domain. Okay. And when they discovered that story, they actually looked at this X inactivation syndrome and worked out this kind of mechanism. Okay. Of course, everything here has been proven. I mean, what I am telling to you has been proven by different kind of experiments. For example, if you delete or mutate the YY1 binding site here, you won't have any more the inactivation. Okay. So this is, as well as, for example, if you delete or mutate this JPX gene that is on the left, you won't have this kind of story. So, I mean, everything was made. The problem is that, as I told you at the beginning, we have so many genes in that locus. Okay, there are so many non-coding genes that people are working. And every time they delete or mutate one of these genes, you lose the inactivation. So it's a real complex story to mount. And nobody really knows complete story. But it's very interesting that finally this PRC2 interaction was shown something like 10 years ago. And this actually was a great discovery to start to understand how it works. Anyway. Okay, so we can probably go through this. Maybe we can stop now, just to make me read a little bit, and then we go to genomic imprinting in a minute. Okay, what I forgot to tell you is that another way that scientists went through this problem was also to recombine all the X inactivation center, no, the X, yeah, I mean, all the locus containing all this story to another chromosome. And it gets completely inactivated. So the mechanism works in trans also. And from one side, and the other side is that it is sufficient. Okay, so there is no other determinant in the X, and that works alone. Okay, even though it's very complicated, but anyway, it works alone. So let's go to this genomic imprinting story. This is another very interesting biological phenomenon. And it was realized a number of years ago, looking at phenotypes that are transmitted only from one sex. Okay, so if you have a gene determining, for example, I don't know, color of eyes, it's not true, but I cannot find any other story. That comes from the father, it is expressed, but if it comes from the mother, it is not expressed. Okay, so in some way, there is something that happens in the father or in the mother that tells just like the X chromosome, right? A test, but this is a local gene, okay? So it's in a single gene, in some sense, okay? That are expressed only from either okay? This is called germinal epigenetic inheritance because it is determined in germ cells. We say these genes are imprinted, and the phenomenon is known as genomic imprinting. Okay, we have something like in mammals, actually in mouse and human, because I don't think that other species have been studied for this. We have something like 120 to 150 genes, like this. There is, again, I took the story from this review of Annie Ferguson Smith, who is probably the main scientist studying this phenomenon, and this is in bibliography if you like to study this phenomenon. Okay. So this epigenetic modification that are determining expression of one or the other alleles are established during gametogenesis and are stable. So this is important, they are stable during the zygotic clearance. You remember that when you make the zygote, you have clearing of everything. There is one of the large phases in which all epigenetic marks are cleared off, because the cells, we said, the cells have to be totipotent. So everything is cleared off, but they escape. Again, we don't know the mechanism, but they escape. So we have no idea about what is the determinant of escaping this kind of erasing, okay? So this is called then parental imprinting, so it's a character that is passed from father or mother to the pups, and you have to distinguish from another phenomenon that has been confused in the literature, actually, so it's really mixed up, so you have to take care of this, from the other phenomenon that is called a transgenerational imprinting, that means a character, an epigenetic character, so an character that is transmitted for several generations. This is different because it means that the marks was already present before the germinal cell maturation. Okay. There are few genes that apparently have a kind of transgenerational imprinting. Mechanism is really obscure, so nobody knows how. But it's different from this parental imprinting, in which is the mother or father that, during production of germinal cells, imprints genes. Now, the other... Yeah, this is something just recitative, like saying the number of genes and so, and actually how it was demonstrated before, knowing, you know, all the technologies that we have today. So today we can look at the epigenetic modification in germinal cells and whatever. It was actually demonstrated by nuclear transplantation experiments. So moving the nucleus from one cell to another and then looking for the expression of it. Actually, many imprinted genes are involved in fetal development and growth. So the function of these genes, right? There are many growth factors. There are many growth factor receptor genes. And some of them also influence behavior. So they have neuronal functioning genes, several of them. And so we know something about classical imprinted genes. And recently we have made methylome analysis in mice by this kind of technology that we'll discuss on Monday. And we found several other imprinted loci of which we really don't know the function, so we don't know. Okay, so but for the moment being, we know that many of those are involved in fetal development and growth. So actually, this is a funny story coming out of this, interesting for biologists, that is why mammals develop this kind of imprinting. And there is a theory for anybody of you who may be interested in that. It's a kind of evolutionary theory about the prevalence of sex. You know that in mammals, most of the mammals, they have a tribal or a way of life. So they are groups of animals living together, like in wolf or whatever, I mean, typical story. Not all of them, I mean, feline, we don't use that, but anyway, quite common. And you know that in this there is a selection of the dominant male. There is a story, I'm not a zoologist, so I don't know the story, but there is the story of the alpha male, let's call it, so the dominant one. And usually this dominant male has a tendency to procreate with different females. And so the story is that it evolutionary story is to try to have big children, as it is. So other alpha dominant males as a progeny, okay? So this came from the fact that many of the father imprinting genes, so paternal imprinted genes, they are actually growth factors. So in some sense, it will impose big fetuses to the females, and alpha dominant child. Okay, so this is a kind of theory. What the female do is that they, as usually the female are more intelligent than men, they know that the life is difficult, and they think that it's probably better to have several reproductive essays than only one big story. So since a pregnancy carrying a very big animal is usually devastating from the female point of view, it can have a lot of problems, especially not in the human population, because we have good foods, we have integrators, whatever, but in the wildlife, a big pregnancy can have a devastating effect on the mother. So they try to defend themselves from this penetrating or dominant character of the male. So this is the zoological theory. I don't know. Maybe you can take it as a funny story or as a real phenomenon, but we don't know. Anyway, these imprinted genes, from the molecular point of view, they have some features that we can try to go through. They first of all, they are usually clusters. Okay, so you find loci in which you have several genes, like in the exist that we saw before. Several genes in which there are several protein-coding genes and some non-coding genes. They always include island, CG island, okay, so part of DNA that is extremely rich in CG. And this is called ICR, that means imprinting control region. Okay, so it's the island of CPG, controlling the functioning of all the region. ICR is a CPG hypermethylated only in one allele. So if you make an analysis of the two alleles, female and male, paternal and maternal, you find hypermethylation of this ICR only in one of those. Okay, so this is the main difference between the two alleles. So we say that this ICR is DMR, so differentially methylated region. The methylation is done, the CPG methylation is done in germinal cells, so in oocytes and during oocyte maturation, during spermatocyte maturation. And the other real interesting characteristic of this loci is that you have each imprinted locus as at least one long non-coding RNA. And this is the common theme with the X story. Okay. There is no balance. It's not 50-50 paternal, maternal. Most of them are coming from the mother. So the most of these imprinted regions are actually in the egg, so from the maternal origin. Only few of them are established in spermatogenesis, so are parental origin. Following fertilization, the allelic methylation marks are maintained throughout development, and they mediate imprinted expression. So they are maintained in the somatic cells until the death. Okay. The methylation to CpG is the main mechanism driving this kind of imprinting. Actually, there was a report very recent in which there was a kind of different story that was not depending on CpG methylation. So the authors actually deleted the NMT3A and 3B that carry on this kind of methylation, and there was still the phenotype. And so they worked out that actually this depends on the methylation of K27. So this K27 methylation of this locus in the oocyte is kept during the early phases of zygote and then will keep silent a part of this locus. So it's a little different story. Okay? But anyway, let's just look at the CpG methylation for the moment. It's more understood, actually. So there is one question. I think that you probably picked it up. So in this figure, we are saying that methylation of CpG is the imprinting mark, okay? And we say that actually is the parent, so the mother or father, that will imprint the gene to impose their expression in the pup. But actually, we know that methylation usually is the other way around, right? What is the effect on transcription of methylation? Silencing. Okay, so we have a strange situation in which hypermethylation actually is the imprinting to expression or something. And this is something that doesn't fit with our model. And actually, it is like this. Okay, so you have the situation here, like a zygote, in which you have two imprinted loci, ICR1, ICR2. And you see that you have imprinting here. Okay, and then you go through the story, okay? You have germinal lineage, erasure, everything, okay? And then the X or the sperm will imprint again. So you have the ICR1 or ICR2 imprinted, and then you go to the zygote and to the adult, and this will kept to the adult animal. But the problem is that this is, for example, the father imprints ICR1 to make it expressed in the animal. Okay, so in the animal you will have ICR1 expressed, not this one, not the maternal one. Okay, and same story for the female. The female, for example, imprints this ICR2, and in the adult you will have this allele expressed, not that one. So the methylated allele is the one which is expressed in the life. So how it happens? Sorry, this is just to show the enzymes that carry this kind of methylation. In primary oocyte, mature oocyte, these are the guys that make this kind of methylation imprinting. Okay, this is in the oocyte, this is in the in the spermatocyte, okay, so you have this kind of guys there that make the marks. Okay, so what is the mechanism? The mechanism is linked to the fact that actually the methylation, the methylated region, so the ICR region, is not the promoter of the gene that you want to express, but is the promoter of a long non-coding RNA that goes in another direction. Okay, so look at this, for example. This is one of the quite well-described loci. This is an IGF-2 receptor, so it's a receptor for an insulin-like growth factor cytokine. Okay. And then you have other genes here. This LC, they are transporters, as probably you know, this SLC means transporters, like the glucose transporter, ion transporters, whatever. Okay. And as you can see, this is the maternal allele. Okay? So the maternal allele is methylated, you see there. So you have methylated ICR here. Okay? And you have this this methylation make this IGF-2 receptor gene to be expressed. Okay? So you have methylation at the ICR and the gene is expressed. This is the strange story, but it's not that strange because actually this guy here, this ICR, is not part of this gene, but is actually the promoter from a long non-coding RNA that goes in the other sense here. Okay? So this is the promoter of IRN, non-coding RNA, that is all this blue story that you see here. Okay? So when you have methylated like this one, this is a normal methylated CpG island. Okay? So when you have hypermethylation, no expression. And in fact, you have no transcription of the antisense long non-coding RNA. Okay? On the contrary, you have expression of the gene over there. In paternal allele, that is not, of course, the ICR is not methylated, you have transcription of the iron RNA, okay? And at this point, you don't have transcription of the IGF receptor 2. This, as you can see, is exactly like the situation of EXIST and TSX, right? Probably very, very like the same. So we have other examples. This is another locus. In this locus you have different genes. This is a potassium channel, KCNNQ1. And again you have an antisense RNA, this link RNA here. Don't say link. Link actually means intergenic. English people, they say LNC RNA. Just to be precise. Okay, so this is called KCNQ1OT1. It's a complicated name, but anyway, this is the LNC RNA going the other side. Okay, and this is the arrow, meaning that the KCNQ1 gene is transcribed like this. The imprinting control region is here. Okay, this black round here. And of course it works as in the other case. So whenever you have methylation here, you don't have LNC RNA transcription this way, so you have transcription of the gene. And whenever you have unmethylated region here, you have transcription of the gene, of LNC RNA and no KCNQ1. So that's it, okay? This is another, I show you several story. This is another locus, very interesting. This is two genes that are encoding growth factors. This is IGF-2, is insulin growth factor like 2, and this is another insulin 2 gene. Okay, so growth factors, hormones and growth factors, and you have a long non-coding RNA gene here that is called H19. This is not antisense, I mean, it's not overlapping as in the other case, it's farther away. And actually, it's so far away that a silencer in between. This is a CTCF binding site. You remember what is CTCF? Okay, and you have here the hypermethylated ICR that is actually the same as CTCF binding site. Okay. But again, you have ITER, H19, non-coding RNA transcription, or protein coding gene transcription. Okay. And this final is another example. Again, maternal, paternal. You have several. This is just to show you that sometimes these loci do not encode for, let's say, important protein development. They encode microRNA or something like this. Here, for example, you have a. Do you know what the SNO, snow RNA are? Yeah, small nuclear. They are involved in the maturation of ribosomal RNA. Okay, so as you can see in this case, they imprint the genes are. This is a Myrna, so the microRNA gene. This is a snRNA gene. Again, miRNA gene. So this locus is a little different. It's not protein coding, but regulatory. Anyway, it works like the other one. So the molecular mechanisms that have been proposed, there is an old model here, the insulator model, and the non-coding RNA model. Actually, I want to tell you about also the insulator model, even though today is a little abandoned. Okay? It was shown in this IGF-2 H19 locus, because there is this phenomenon of CTCF in between. So you have the two genes that are IGF-2 or the gene encoding for the non-coding RNA here, and you have an enhancer that is just downstream the H19. Okay? So this is interrupted just because there is a long piece of chromosome in between, so just to show you. They are quite farther away. Okay? So, in the maternal locus, you have this gene here is not expressed, right? Okay, in the maternal, because it is imprinted in the paternal. So, in this case, the insulator that please, it's the same story as we called before ICR, imprinting region, the same story, okay? This is a CpG-rich region, CG island, okay, that is gets heavily methylated in men, not in female, okay, and this CTCF is that insulator protein that we encountered already, and this is a methylation sensitive transcription factor, in the sense that when you have unmethylated DNA, it can bind, but if you have methylated DNA, it cannot bind anymore, okay, so in some sense, this is bound to it and makes two domains. You remember the story of the domains, okay? It makes two domains separated, and so the enhancer cannot work on this gene, okay? It works only on the H19 promoter. So you have transcription of H19. On the contrary, when you have imprints in the paternal chromosome, okay, the CTCF cannot bind, and this is made. Everything makes part of the same domain of chromatin, so no interruption in between. So in this case, the enhancer can act on the promoter of IGF-2 and not on the other one. Okay. So this is the story, and this is a model that was proposed several years ago by a group working in USA at the NCI. But actually, it's probably true. But the problem is, again, that some of the effect is mediated by H19, because if you delete or mutate this H19, you lose the effect. So in some sense, H19 has an effect on this choice. So the other model is the common model coming from the exist story. Okay. So it happens that when you have this locus, the one that you saw before, and this is the KCNQ1 locus that you saw before. Okay, so whenever you have transcription of the antisense long non-coding RNA, you don't have expression of the gene, protein coding gene. Same story here. And when you have expression of the gene, you don't have expression of the antisense link RNA. So people worked on these RNAs. They found exactly the same binding site for PCR2. PRC2, we'll never learn. PRC2 complex, as you saw before on the exist. Okay, so the mechanism here is extremely similar to the one that you saw on the X chromosome. Whenever you have this, this will bind to the PRC2, and this will lead to heterochromatization of this region, so no transcription of the gene, okay? Very easy. It has been demonstrated only for these two cases, actually. Demonstrated in not that the other were not demonstrated, but the formal demonstration of the involvement of PRC2 is there. Only these two imprinted loci. Okay? Good. The other one await demonstration, maybe you in your thesis work. Anyway, that's it. And okay, there is another question that I wanted to discuss with you before stopping, is that one. So why, as you can see from these models, there are other genes in the story. For example, this one is very complex, right? So when you have, for example, this kind of maternal imprinting here, okay, you have transcription of all these boxes that you see there. They are protein coding genes. They encode for different proteins. I don't know the meaning of them. You can go to the genome browser and ask for that. I don't know really what they are. But look at this. When you see red boxes, means that these genes are expressed. While when you see these gray boxes, means that these genes are not expressed. So that this is a completely open question in this kind of imprinting. If we reason, okay, that whenever you have transcription of this long non-coding RNA, you have heterochromatization of the region, that is probably the logical consequence to have this PRC2 complex recruited to it, how do you can explain the expression of other genes? Okay? And on the contrary, when you have this kind of block, how can you explain the fact that these genes are not expressed? Maybe the lack of transcription factor, maybe other things. But anyway, it's something that we have still to explain completely. There are many cases of those. The same here, you see that this guy here is not expressed. Actually, it's not expressed at all, also in the other paternal chromosome, so it may be that it has a specific inhibition to it. I mean, but this has to be worked out completely, so. Which one?
Yeah. So the black genes in the legend are directly expressed.
Yeah.
They're not
expressed. Yeah. Maybe you're. Oh, you are right. This is a biallelical expressed. You are right. Now, biallelical means that they are expressed in both stories. This gray here, they are either expressed or not. Sorry. Thank you. No. That, but by mean it's the same story. So why they are not stopped? So that's. That's the story. And why the other ones are not expressed here. So that's make something that we have still to understand. Okay, anyway, that's the story, and it's quite interesting also. Where we were? Somewhere here. Okay. What I have still to say to you, okay, this is a subject because we will discuss it in the future. There are many long-coding RNA, we told already. We have something like today in the gene code catalog, we have 22,000 long-coding genes. Of course, it's difficult to say that all of them work in this kind of model. It's difficult to say. But of course, many of those can work in transcriptional repression or transcriptional activation. The model is exactly that one. And I just repeat that, the story is to have transcription and then to have binding of a repressor. And this RNA is kept close to the gene by interaction with some element in the DNA, in order not to move it to different places. So this is an apparent contradiction. I just wanted you to appreciate this fact. And when the people discovered this phenomenon that was around 2006, there was an editorial on Nature say that was entitled Silence to Talk. That means we need talking to silence, in the sense that we have to express a gene in order to make it repressed. And this is an apparent contradiction. I gave you an exercise, probably you have made it already, I don't know. In the Moodle side there is another small exercise that is talking about a very similar situation, that is the centromeric region in East. I don't know if anybody of you has looked at this yet. Probably not, because yesterday you were engaged in different stories. Non è aperto?
Sì. Non ho controllato.
The name is an additional model for transcriptional repression. Maybe I didn't open yet. I will. Anyway, there is a centromeric silencing. We told already that the centromeric region is always heterochromatic. And working in yeast, people demonstrated that if in the very center of the centromere, there is transcription in both sides. There is a small piece of the centromere that is transcribed, exactly as in this case, both sides. So you have sense and anti-sense. Okay? Whenever you have sense, anti-sense, this is strongly suggestive of a phenomenon that probably you know. Try to think about. Yeah. siRNA, RNA interference. Whenever you have transcription from one side, from the other side, you make double helix RNA, and this will induce RNA interference response in the cells. So cutting in piece, dicer enzyme that makes small pieces, then AGO proteins that keep it and go back. So people started to work on this centromere, and they found that if you downregulate, actually in yeast it's very easy to knock out genes. So they knocked out each single genes in the pathway of RNA interference, that are the dicer enzyme, then the AGO and the AGO protein coding, and then another protein that is present in yeast, we don't have it, that is RNA-dependent RNA polymerase. And each of them completely eliminated the centromeric heterochromatization. So in that case, apparently, this kind of reverse transcription is justified by this siRNA model. People try to replicate in higher eukaryotes, like in human cells or whatever, and nobody could get it. So it's probably a different mechanism in some sense. But anyway, this is interesting because you have to transcribe a region to get it heterochromatized, so silent. So this is probably it just depends on the level of transcription. So to justify this kind of mechanism, just think about, you need a very little transcription actually, because the RNA stays there. Okay? So the RNA is transcribed, but this is the RNA polymerase. And this is the binding protein, like the YY1 that you saw before, that binds both DNA and RNA. So the RNA stays there. No need to transcribe it more and more and more. So probably it's just occasional transcription, right? In some sense. Probably whenever the chromatin loses a little bit, your transcription, then block again, that is probably kept for several, for a long time. I mean, that's the story. Okay, so just a resume of what we know. Whenever the RNA plays a role in silencing, so this is the centromere that I just told you about. This is the exist, this is the gene that we just saw, and this is the IGF-2 receptor locus. So that's it. Final comment that is probably interesting for some of you, I don't know. That is the there is a story that is very interesting in today, it's very explored today, there are many papers on it. Especially from your colleagues that are in the other laurea magistrale, biologists that study different phenomena like ecology or whatever. Because there is an idea that transgenerational epigenetic inheritance, or simply the imprinting phenomenon that we have seen, may be due to exposure of the father or the mother to any kind of environmental stimuli, like foods, lifestyle, pollutants, drugs, drinking, stresses, and whatever. There are many cases in which, for example, a stress, the kids of a stressed mother also have a stressed phenotype. And this is very difficult to explain. I mean, it's very difficult to explain because, of course, this is a common feeling idea. I mean, if your mother is stressed, probably you are stressed either, but it's not necessarily for epigenetic inheritance. So it's very difficult to distinguish the two stories. For example, there is this caution. This transgenerational inheritance has to be demonstrated by molecular studies. So you have to really realize that there is some change in the spermatocyte of the father, for example, that will influence the expression of that allele in the pups, right? That will determine the phenotype, same as in the father. It's a kind of Lamarckian, right? Lamarckian heredity. Okay, so the father acquires a modification. It will put this modification on the spermatocyte, and this modification is kept. But it's very difficult to distinguish because you have to study the spermatocyte itself. I mean, something can happen in a single spermatocyte, right? So, for example, a father that is a drug abuser, okay? Maybe that one of his spermatocytes gets an epigenetic modification that will inherit this kind of predisposition to the drugs, to the pups, but how can you manage to demonstrate that? Really, really, really hard, okay? So it's very difficult. There are examples in which epigenesis doesn't play any kind of role. For example, the famous example of the stress. Rats that are nurtured by stressed mother are more likely to be stressed. This is something that ethologists know very well, okay? And the phenotype is perpetuated across generations. So if you continue, you are still this kind of phenotype, okay? And this involves setting a stress state by hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis in the pup, and there is an epigenetic change in the glucocorticoid receptor gene promoter. So there is a difference in methylation of the glucocorticoid receptor gene promoter in the hippocampus of the pups. And scientists did a simple experiment, so they changed mothers. So the pups of a mother, they were nurtured by different matter that were not stressed and so on, no stress phenotype. This is something that is established in the pup, a cause because of the mother stresses, not because of a gamete inheritance. Okay, so that's very important. I mean, this is stressing. Okay, it's something that we can just talk like this and joking. But actually, in the case of foods, drugs, pollutants, or whatever, this is an important point. I mean, if you take any kind of epigenetic modification that can be transmitted to the progeny, this is an important point. So it has been worked out, but till now we don't have that many demonstrations of the existence of this kind of inheritance. Okay. Okay. So just to finish, in your review, you have other two different cases of monoallelic expression that I won't discuss. But you can go through the review, they are very well explained. One is the antigen receptor that are immunoglobulins in B cells and T cell receptors in T cells, of course. Okay, that you, as you remember, they come with a recombinant event. Did you study immunology? Okay. So I imagine that in immunology also there was an explanation that after the recombination event you have only one allele that is expressed per cell. Okay, so this is a kind of monoallelic expression. And in this case the hypothesis justifying only one allele expression is that you have limiting transcription factors or a kind of feedback, okay, as we discussed before. Then the final story that is also very interesting for especially to neurobiologists in between you is the story of olfactory receptors. You may probably know that each sensitive neuron actually expresses only one kind of olfactory receptor among something like in the mouse something like 1400s. It's a lot of possibility. And if you look at the single neuron, you see only one of those and all the other ones are heterochromatized. Okay, so this is, again, a case of selection and counting and whatever. And it's very interesting because this was one of the few, really few cases in which it was demonstrated to have an interchromosomal interaction. Because these 1400 genes are actually in clusters but in different chromosomes. Okay, so we have many clusters in different chromosomes, right? And apparently the expression of these guys depends on a single announcer, which is on chromosome 14 in the mouse. Close to a group of genes, actually. Okay. So people demonstrated that whenever you have expression of one of these many alleles, you have direct interaction of the enhancer to the promoter of that gene, even if it is on a different chromosome. So they demonstrated it using this 3C technology. You probably remember I presented it. Okay. So making cross-linking and then making a cut and ligate and PCR, so to show they are close together. And this was extremely discussed and disputed the result because nobody wanted to believe that there was a specific interaction in another chromosome with the gene on another chromosome. Nobody would believe it. It was very, very discussed, and finally, actually, it is demonstrated recently. It is true, especially because what you see quite clearly is that in each cell, you have that all the genes make a big cluster, a big body, in the center of the nucleus, where you find all the 1400 genes together. And they all heterochromatized, except one. And this one is not in the same location. So the only one that is expressed is a different place and interacts with the enhancer. So this is quite interesting. Anyway, in your review, you see there is a discussion on this case. And the reason why, how you can establish one, is probably because when you express one of the genes, this is the mechanism, when you have a single transcription of a single gene, this goes it can cause for a protein on the surface, of course, and this will give us activation of a signal transduction. This signal transduction will induce factors that bind to all other genes, all other alleles, and induce them to heterochromatize together. So that's the reason why. If you, people actually describe the sum of the protein, the signal transduction event, and when you knock them out or knock them down, you don't have any more this kind of selection. Okay, so the story is over now. I can tell you bye-bye. See you on Monday. On Monday, please remember that we are going to discuss the research paper too, so please have a read before coming to the lesson so we can discuss a little bit better. I told you that I presented to you the research paper 1 in a detailed fashion. I won't present in the same fashion this research paper 2. It's up to you. I want just to discuss some technical aspects that are a little difficult to understand. Okay? Good? Okay, see you then.